Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited because with us today, we have AJ Dye. AJ is the Chief Operating Officer of Vertex Innovations. He's also the venture partner with Unify Ventures. AJ, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Christian. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So why don't we start with Vertex? We'd love to know what problem it's solving in the market.
Yeah, you bet. So Vertex is we're a construction consulting services business, primarily in the telecom and data center space. And we effectively, our core competency is quality management. And so we really help our clients improve and execute on their projects across a wide range of applications. But we deliver that primarily through professional services, which means owner's rep, project management, those types of services. We also do integrated services, which typically means like staffing, QA, QC, those types of things. And then we also have a managed services business, primarily helping our clients implement and work with Procore in the construction space, which is they're the category leader that most folks in the industry use. But throughout all that, it's the idea being that quality is at the core of any successful construction project, and we've got a 20-year track record of doing so, and with some of the world's largest telecom providers, so that's what we're executing on.
Fantastic. All right, so you're an operator and also an investor. So let's talk about Unify. What's the firm's focus?
Yeah, you bet. So Unify is a deal-by-deal B2B tech software or technology investment firm. And we do it by working with about 60 LPs who are all operator entrepreneurs themselves. And so we think that gives us a unique advantage in terms of the types of opportunities we look at. We primarily focus on expansion stage companies. So to us, that's kind of 10 million and up in terms of revenue, typically growing 30% or more, and are like within a year of profitability. And I think what we're really looking for there is companies that have clear product market fit, solid ICP, attacking a big market, and then, founders and operators who we find good alignment with in terms of what success looks like, right? Where, we're not necessarily making the moonshot bets in terms of, massive swings, that kind of thing. From a risk point of view, we think of ourselves more as risk managers. And so we're putting money to work working with those types of partners.
Fantastic. So before we unpack both of those, it sounds like it may be valuable to talk about your background. Would love to know what your careers look like and how it led up to both of these companies.
Yeah, you bet. So I'm a Colorado native. I grew up in Colorado and started my career in investment banking, worked for a small boutique firm that we did middle market casino transactions. So we were doing M&A and capital raises with, everything from riverboat casinos in the Midwest to Native American tribes to some of the smaller like mining towns here in Colorado, those types of things. And really interesting way to learn the kind of banking skill set. And then transitioned into venture capital when I went to business school. And I ran the corporate venture effort here in North America for a large Taiwanese electronics company for several years. And, we also did some M&A there as well, but, that was a lot of fun. And then I joined, did a little stint doing venture banking, and then joined Unify, which was previously called Irongate Capital. Joined Irongate like 6 years ago, and then we've since rebranded the firm this year. But kind of 15-year investment career, and then just recently made the move over to Vertex to try my hand on the operating side. It's an itch I've had for a couple of years now to go try and build something. And so decided that now was a good time to go make the move.
Great. You may have the distinction of one of being the few guests we've had on the podcast who have experience in investment banking. So I'm going to take advantage of it. I'd love to know what the experience was like. And I'll say I come at it with, having read stories of how there's pressure on investment banks to reduce the amount of hours that some of their team members work, i.e. it can be pretty stressful. Would love to get the insider's view of what that was like.
Yeah, you bet. So we were a little unique. I didn't have the, the bulge bracket Wall Street experience. Our boutique, it was a boutique shop. It was only a handful of them. And I was the only junior banker. So everything kind of rolled downhill to my desk in a lot of ways. And so we definitely had peaks and valleys. I mean, I consistently probably worked like 80-hour weeks. So I wasn't doing 100, like I might have been on Wall Street, but I definitely had a few 100-hour weeks for sure when we were really busy. And it was, it's excellent training in the sense that, like, when you work 100-hour weeks, you basically work you get twice as much experience in the same week as anybody working a 40 or 50-hour week, right? So it's intense, it's a grind, but you get so many shots on goal and reps in terms of deals and things, right? So you learn a ton in a couple of years. And it's great training. I do think that skill set, I continue to use it, and I continue to run financial models in Excel and do some of the basics that kind of stuff taught me. But then it's also just a ton of deal reps, which is really valuable.
Well, I think you just started to answer my next question, was those key takeaways from the experience. It sounds like financial modeling was up there. What other experience have carried forward either into the CVC, your time at Unify, or now Vertex?
Yeah, I think the biggest one, is really how different each organization can operate. Thinking about like a Native American tribe as an example, they are kind of, they're sovereign entities, and they don't have some of the same incentives that a typical for-profit business may have, So they're thinking about a different set of stakeholders, different constituents. And so their decision-making varies, So there's a lot of that kind of meeting the client, meeting your partners where they are, and aligning, aligning incentives and aligning what success looks like, that I think really carries over today. And that plus like, working at Delta, it was a Taiwanese company, so we did a lot of business in Asia and all over the world and that kind of thing. And so I think a lot of that stuff has really kind of informed my lens on the world now in many ways.
Well, high five again, another great segue, because what I was going to ask next is, so corporate venture capital, as compared to Unify, you have one limited partner, the corporation. What was that experience like, knowing that the stakeholder is the company who's devoting their capital to helping the overall strategy?
Yeah, you bet. So corporate venture is interesting in the sense that everybody does it differently. And there is a wide spectrum of what each sort of LP, to your point, is trying to accomplish. And I think it's on one end, you've got very highly strategic sort of goals and incentives where they're investing as a almost defensively, in the sense that like many corporations just want lots of optionality on the new on cutting edge technology, right? And so they just want to be able to see what's out in the market up close, all the way to the other end where it's purely financial return driven, much like the old like Intel Capital or GE Capital model. And then there's everything in between. And so we were kind of more on the financial side. And interestingly, again, back to like various stakeholders, in some corporations, you have to get sort of BU approval from one of the major business units within a massive global organization to get anything done. And others, it's a little bit different kind of risk tolerance. And so it really varies quite different, quite a lot in terms of, now that said, the value add can be really significant. You know, if you're able to penetrate a major global corporation like that of a kind of Fortune 500 size and scale, those can be real needle movers in terms of scaling up. And where it gets tricky, I think, is just making sure folks keep their incentives aligned.
To me, fascinating is the right word, but, you know, this idea that you have the support of the larger corporation, I got to think that these portfolio companies have a distinct advantage that, you know, just helps increase the odds of being successful. At the same time,
yeah,
you know, you have a mandate if you're a principal on the fund, whereas, you know, I presume, but I won't, you can tell me, Unify, you have a bit more latitude. So if I recall correctly, you said about 60 some odd previous operator tech focused LPs. And so why that angle? Why did the firm's principals feel like that's a valuable direction to go?
Yeah. So what we found was, the firm was started, the precursor IronGate was started like 20 years ago. And the first, call it, you know, dozen or so LPs all fit that profile. And what they found was they wanted access to direct investments. They didn't necessarily, they were in plenty of funds, the typical blind pool fund, right? But they found they were seeing enough interesting direct investment opportunities that it was worth spending time on, but that they really didn't have the due diligence sort of either capabilities or time. And so having a network of like-minded folks plus a professional investment team to go and do that work, like, man, that could really hum. And we've definitely found that to be the case, that we've got, you know, many of our LPs are always a phone call away. They pick up the phone and help out. They're eager to help out. Many of them still running companies or retired or what have you, that whole spectrum. But that expertise in name your industry vertical, name your stage of business, whatever the kind of key risk in the business might be, having some folks with some expertise helping us out with diligence and looking over our shoulder on stuff. Not only is it helpful for us as the investment manager, it's also really strong validation for the rest of the LPs to go, oh man, okay, this looks like an interesting opportunity. Oh, and those three or four really smart people validated that this is interesting. You know, so when you go out to kind of syndicate dollars, as you can imagine, that's when the magic starts happening. It's really worked for 20 years.
And so are most of the investments structured as SPVs, or have there been separate funds?
Yep.
Yep,
they're all SPVs.
I mean, that makes great sense. You reduce your costs and you're also getting validation, when you're going to the group, because you'll get their feedback immediately. I love it.
You bet. And then many of them jump into in the boardroom, you know, they'll be observers and they'll continue acting as advisors as well as we scale the business. So it's not, you know, it's not just diligence. It's a longer term sort of relationship, which is great.
I love it. And so, tech focus. If we can talk about AI, my opinion is an industrial revolution. I bet if we were to fast forward 20 years, we could probably argue we're at the top of the first inning, even though I released ChatGPT almost, 3 years ago, 2.5?
Mm-hmm.
Would love your take, you know, what percentage of deals are focused on artificial intelligence? You know, are there key considerations, you know, that you guys are considering when you look at this technology?
Yeah, you bet. Industry-wide, I think, what was it, last quarter, it was something like 70% of the deals were AI deals, I think. So, you know, you could probably argue that the venture industry has kind of become AI all the time. It's definitely bifurcating. We haven't spent as much time in it necessarily because of what I mentioned that, you know, through our deal by deal model, we're not necessarily playing that same sort of power law focused venture game that many of the large funds are. So we're trying to be a little bit more methodical about the way we approach it. To this point, I think we've really, and I'm finding this in my operating role as well, is what an incredible tool it is just in from executing on a business and just improving the efficiency of a business. On the investment side, I think it can be I think it's tricky right now for folks like us if we're not able to make lots of bets across kind of AI generally, because it can be really tough to tell how much of some of the rapid ARR growth that we're seeing is really durable. I think there's a lot of enterprises out there that are kind of just test driving AI to see if it really works or not. And I do have a little bit of pause that some of that insane revenue growth we're seeing in some of these companies is really sustainable, right? And of course, too, what I hear from a lot of my peers as well is that the really strong deals, your A deals in the market are really competitive right now. And so, you know, valuations are back to, in some cases, where we were in kind of 2021, 2022. And so those aren't a great fit for us either. But that said, I think to your point, what blows me away is just the pace of innovation and how quickly things are changing. You know, I'll take a day and go deep on some things, and I come back a couple weeks later and it's totally changed. And so there are definitely days and weeks where I'm kind of, am I keeping up? I'm not so sure. But it is a remarkable tool in terms of just, you know, if agents start to really pick up, automating repetitive tasks, a lot of the stuff that none of us like doing, man, what a tool it can be.
100% agreed. Yeah, it was funny having a conversation with our product manager, and you know, we were same response as you had. The volume of new solutions that are coming on market are so overwhelming. It's like it's a grind to keep up, and you know, it's to agree, you can't help but feel you have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure you're using best in class tools. And so it's just like, all right, we're going to need a framework here.
That's right.
Everything just because it's a shiny new tool, and they're making some bold promises, you know, we may want to make sure they got some staying power, to your earlier comment on revenue, before we start doing our own due diligence. Okay, so AI aside, would love to know what other types of tech you're bullish on.
So we've been spending time, we've actually been looking at some like MarTech opportunities where AI is driving some interesting efficiencies. It's typically a pretty crowded space that a lot of VCs don't necessarily like. We found a couple of interesting opportunities there, spending time in and around aerospace. Some of that is a function of being in Colorado, Denver in particular, Denver Boulder, has really become, arguably like the aerospace hub in the U.S. It's probably kind of Denver, L.A., you know, Florida. So we're seeing a lot of interesting just sort of local aerospace opportunities. And then we still fundamentally are still just looking for interesting, along this kind of AI theme of like digitizing future of work process within an organization through enterprise SaaS. You know, I still think we're seeing some pretty interesting opportunities in that general theme. But we're pretty opportunistic investors. We're not super thematic in that way. And so we defer to some of what our LPs are working on and some of that other stuff. But that's where we've been spending our time.
Okay. I acknowledge Unify's taken a bit of a unique approach relative to the rest of the venture capital ecosystem by SPVs versus a fund. That said, I'd love for you to forecast your thoughts on the future of venture, whether it's year, 5 years, 10 years. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we're at a really interesting time in the industry in that, you know, if you look at the last year or two, how much bifurcation is happening, in the sense that it was what, in 2024, the overwhelming majority of dollars raised in new funds was from the top 30 firms in the world. And so there is definitely a cohort of firms, the kind of billion plus and up fund size, that are playing, I think, a different game than maybe we are at Unify, right? And so venture capital, if you look at where Andreessen, General Catalyst, a lot of those firms have kind of taken their model, it starts to look much more like an asset management firm than the artisanal craft, you know, $200 million fund venture capital of the kind of 2000s, right? And so that's driving a lot of really interesting activity. You're seeing much bigger early stage rounds, investing in AI, some of those things. And then the lack of liquidity that we're seeing, right? Even the best funds in the world haven't had much DPI for 4 or 5 years. That plus the increase in interest rates driving up cost of capital, I think, has really, there's going to be a lot of smaller funds that if they don't have that long-term track record and help trust with LPs, you know, raising a new fund might be pretty challenging. And so I do think there is going to be a bit of a shift and sort of reshuffling of the cards across the industry. And it might be, there might be fewer firms across the industry in a few years than there is today.
Opinion on what breaks the liquidity logjam?
Boy, that's the magic question. Certainly seeing a lot more secondary activity in the last year or so. You know, the IPO conversation is always interesting. I'd be curious your thoughts on this, that the IPO window being open seems to be such an interesting signal for the market generally. But it really only impacts, you know, 10 companies maybe, right? I mean, it's really reserved for like the best of the best. And so I don't think that's necessarily the answer for the industry sort of widely. But I do think, you know, if we see a little more stability in the markets, some of the recent tariff stuff, right, is just driving uncertainty. If some of that quiets down, then M&A hopefully will pick back up, and strategics will be more comfortable deploying cash up their balance sheets.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? So if I were to put on your hat and say, what are my rate limiting steps for an IPO? It's generally going to be, I'd say size is going to be a big one. And the second one is just going to be cost. You know, for the benefit of our audience, we're recording this in mid-May 2025. And there's already been movement within the current administration to lower the costs and reporting requirements to go public. Now, I mean, that helps, but it doesn't necessarily go to the size requirements that many of the exchanges have. And so you think about it, what would need to happen? Well, either the companies grow materially larger, or I think you see more consolidations. And so if there's an agreement that, you know, water follows the path of least resistance, I would sooner say we're going to see more PE-like consolidations, either because someone agrees that, hey, we can get to an IPO faster and get our investors' liquidity, or just because it's going to be a bigger and bigger roll-up, and that in itself will act like liquidity. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the big things about interest rates, you know, while it's slowed things down, it's also, I think, reoriented everyone to the value of, hey, we should think about our bottom line. We should think about, you know, net margins a little bit more closely. And I think in the end, that's good, because otherwise you can you have a potential for bubbles because you get capital misallocated because everyone's just like, it's a party until it's not.
You bet.
Hey, if we can, so let's come back to artificial intelligence as it pertains to Vertex. So super
Yeah.
exciting. Well, you're now chief operating officer, and so you have a lot of decision-making authority. Would love to know how you're looking at the business with your artificial intelligence lenses on.
Yeah, so it comes, I think, in a couple different flavors. First is that, we spend a lot of time, but the bulk of our business is in and around the data center industry. And so just AI is really the demand driver for the bulk of, the services we provide. So that's a super interesting tailwind. When I thought about making a change, like that was one of the first things I thought about is like, okay, is this an industry with a big tailwind? And so it's a little bit twofold in that that's driving pull in our business, but it's also an execution tool, as I mentioned before. And so we're, I think about like our managed services business as an example. We're trying to, I'm pretty much chatting with our team like every day. Hey, however you're spending your time, have in the back of your head, like what can I automate? What can I automate? What can I be automating? And so as a when you're running a services business, it's an incredible tool, right?
Yeah.
So we're thinking about it that way. And what's interesting too is that in data centers, the constraints now are, a year ago was much more around GPUs and certain pieces of equipment inside the data center stack. And now the primary constraints are really more power and skilled labor. You see like what happened with XAI and their data center in Memphis. They had to, Elon got like 30 gas turbines there to power the system, and he did it in like record time, and no one else has really been able to figure out how to do that. But power and access to the grid seems to be the primary constraint. And those are complex projects that take a lot of time to engineer and get stood up and design. So we're thinking about it that way in terms of where we go next.
So, one of the variables that I hear that impacts this, and just listening to you share your thoughts, is geography. Do you have access to energy, but then also do you have the talent to be able to service the center? And so, for the benefit of our audience, who like myself, who are not as dialed in, but would love to learn more. Trends that you see in the country, like where's some of the prime real estate, and then what are some of the tactics or strategies that you see data center companies employing to address
Yeah, you bet. So today, if you look at data centers, the bulk of the projects that are up and running are primarily in Virginia, Texas, and the Bay Area. Those have been the three to date. Back to the PowerPoint, though, there is certainly a major question of like, okay, have those areas kind of is the grid maxed out in those areas? And so what a lot of folks are, we're starting to have some of these conversations with folks who are like renewable energy project developers and that kind of thing. And hey, can you come in and put a geothermal plant that's behind the meter next to a data center or a large solar facility that where you can still get interconnect, but it's far enough out that you can build solar in a cost-effective way, right? So there's some of those considerations. And then there's also really simple stuff just like temperature, right? There's a pretty meaningful data center sort of build out in Arizona, but man, it gets hot down there in the summer, right? And so your cooling needs go way up, which makes those more expensive to operate, et cetera, et cetera. And so there are parts of the country like Ohio and Minnesota and some other areas of the Midwest that are really starting to see a lot more activity. As folks are looking for some alternative solutions in the sense that like, hey, this is actually a cost-effective place to operate. We've got access to power. it's not crazy hot or cold or what have you to kind of operate this facility, et cetera. And so I think folks are starting to expand beyond where the kind of the core facilities have been built so far.
Okay. So for the benefit of our audience, we're both Mountain West, Colorado,
yep.
Montana, gorgeous states. Montana, a bit unique. We're a headwater state, but we also have tremendous access to geothermal, somewhat in part thanks to the caldera that is Yellowstone, which is predominantly in Wyoming. But there's more cows than there are people in Montana. Mm-hmm. So you come back to just labor. You know, how even if there's consensus that there are other states outside the three you named in cooler areas, what do you see as solving this people problem of attracting and retaining the right expertise to some of these off the beaten path places?
Yeah, you bet. It's a real challenge. I mean, skills like electricians, plumbers, network engineers, a lot of that stuff, we're definitely in a shortage. And so what we've found, and actually this is a service that we spend time on in Vertex, that staffing is one of our core competencies. And so we've been fortunate through our 20 years of experience that we've got a pretty good network of folks that not only are they talented, but like we've done the work with them over the years so that we're confident that they do the job well. But it's going to come down to, fortunately, a lot of those folks tend to be somewhat mobile. But these data centers, when you stand them up, they're creating thousands of jobs while they're under construction, right? So hopefully we're seeing some sort of activity. Like here in Colorado, there was a bill in the state legislature that last month that offered a whole bunch of tax incentives for folks to create jobs here in Colorado building data center projects. So I anticipate we'll probably see some more of that at the state level. And then just training, hopefully there's a lot of folks that recognize what a compelling and interesting career like being, electricians and can be. They're now at a point where they can make a pretty good living doing that kind of stuff. So we'll see. That's a tricky problem to solve. Unfortunately, I don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah, totally makes sense. I was reading last week that Google opened the bus racks for electricians. Exactly for the reason you called out. And so, hey, college students who are listening, make note. Trades are great, tremendous demand. And I think it's a fair bet the data centers are going to be here for a long while.
You bet.
AJ, it's been an awesome podcast. Before we wrap up, one of my favorite questions I enjoy asking is, a little bit of retrospective. So if you had a chance to go back, have a conversation with your younger self, any age, doesn't matter, what would you share?
Oh, interesting. I would say when in doubt, do the work.
Mm.
When in doubt, do the work, right? That you see an opportunity, see something that's, just that, let that intellectual curiosity. I think that is one of the most kind of an intellectually curious person with a growth mindset can accomplish so darn much. Lean into that, right? That if there's something you want to figure out how to do it, go do the work, figure it out. It is nearly always rewarding.
What do you think prevents people from doing the work?
That's a great question. Certainly distraction.
Hmm.
Sometimes fear, am I going to waste a bunch of time here? Can I figure this out? I don't know, maybe not. And see it through, see it all the way through.
It's great. Being able to identify that chasm. You know, it's a good road sign. And my experience, I think, reinforces your perspective. Take the leap. It's good. You know, even if you fall, you're still going to learn.
Going to learn.
Yeah, good stuff. AJ, if there are any members of our audience who'd like to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. I'm available via email. AJ@unify.vc.com. Always around. Please feel free to reach out. Or I'm at my Vertex email is AJ.Dye@vertex-us.com.
Fantastic. Good stuff. AJ, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate your time and your perspective. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Christian. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. And again, for the benefit of our audience, again, AJ Dye, AJ is a venture partner with Unify Ventures, as well as the chief operating officer with Vertex Innovations. And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinTrap Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Take care. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.